At the tone, the time will be exactly...
Time for the Mo Kelly Show.
Set it off, Mr. Mo Kelly.
Joy and pain are like sunshine and rain. Sing it now, God's children. Joy and pain are like sunshine and rain. Rain, get to rob it.
KFI AM 640, we are live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. This is the Mo Kelly Show with her returning series, Fox's Duncanville, which has already been renewed for a third season ahead of season 2's premiere on Sunday, May 23rd, and returning to her high-action role as the deadly assassin Tigress on the CW Stargirl, which is preparing for its season 2 premiere on August 10th, Joy Osmansky, the actor and dancer, is probably one of the busiest moms in Hollywood. Somehow, some way, she juggles it all. But I think she'll always be, and this is just for me, Dr. Kwan from Shameless.
Dr. Kwan explained to me that you will bleed out and die if you carry 6 babies to term.
Then why did you implant all those embryos in me?
Because there was only a 5% chance of any of them surviving implantation in your shriveled up uterus.
So what you're saying is I'm a medical miracle?
You'll be a medical tragedy if you carry all 6 of those fetuses to term.
I am willing to take my chances.
Ingrid, we are going to go to Dr. Kwan's office. She's going to do the procedure,
and then
I will take you home.
No, get out of my house!
If you don't come to my office right now, I will go North Korean on you
and reach into your
vagina and rip the embryos out of your uterus!
In any event, you should see her face right now. Yes. Yes, you're Dr. Kwan. In any event, Joy Osmansky joins me right now via Zoom. Joy, it's nice to meet you. It's nice to see you. How are you?
I'm well, and I promise I will not go North Korean on your ass.
My wife watches, I should say watched, because the show just came to an end, Shameless religiously.
Oh,
saw every single episode, and I was doing my prep, and then she comes in and is like, who are you getting ready to interview? And I said, she's like, oh my gosh, Dr. Kwan. And she had
that
to tell
me
it's like,
really happy.
Yeah, and she had to tell me, it's like, well, look, she did have the 6 babies, however many there were.
I mean, the whole thing was so perfect. I mean, that show is incredible, and it was so much fun, you know, to be on a show where you have permission to go there, you know what I mean? Like, that show of all shows really, really went there. And that was so much fun. And working with Katie and Bill, I was just like, I can't believe I get to do this. I really can't believe I get to do this.
Which leads me to my next question. How do most people find you? In other words, you're talking to me and instantly I think of Shameless, but depending on whom you're speaking with, it could be Stargirl. It could be Duncanville. I mean, it could be Santa Clarita Diet. It could be a number of things. How do people find that connection with you most often?
You're right. Santa Clarita Diet is often something that people might recognize me from. But you know what? I get a lot of notes that harken back to It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yes.
Which is just in one episode. But that scene, because those guys are legends, that scene with Charlie, more people have been like, oh my God, that's you? And it's just me. I don't know. I couldn't tell you what my character's name was. All I remember was sitting across from Charlie Day and trying not to laugh the entire time, which is really fun.
Hi.
Hi.
Are you Charlie Kelly?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm late.
You're Jackie.
Yes, I am. Are you all right?
I was running.
Okay, because you're bleeding.
Oh, shit. Is it bleeding again? I'm sorry. These are hornet stings, you know? I run into, like a lot of, like, hornets in my line of work, and I get stung up, like, bad all over my face and stuff, and then, you know, it starts bleeding.
Oh, sounds interesting.
Yeah.
What is it that you do again?
I'm like a janitor. I'm a full-on rapist, you know? Africans, dyslexics, children, that sort of thing.
I'm sorry. Did you say you're a full-on rapist?
No. Did I say that? No. I help people, you know what I mean? I'm a philanthropist? Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It gets blocked up in my mouth. I don't say it no good. So.
Your life and story, your professional history, they all fascinate me, but I think it's good to always start at the beginning. You were born in Seoul, South Korea. you made your way to America in the sense of through adoption, a family brought you to America. What stands out as far as your childhood? What memories are strongest and come to mind?
I was lucky in many respects because my adopted parents were pretty educated about what it meant to adopt internationally. So I was lucky. They never tried to whitewash me. My heritage was celebrated. And that is not always the case for international adoptees, particularly Korean American adoptees. So I count myself fortunate. And then I grew up in a place that was pretty white, but I still feel like I had a really positive childhood, and that was largely because of my family. And then I was never a kid who knew I wanted to be an actor. I was not that precocious child dancing on the table, but I was indulged. My artistic sensibilities were indulged always. And that's another thing I'm really fortunate to have experienced, because that is not always the case.
You say you weren't dancing on the table, but you did at one point start with ballet. So you were formally trained. And I have to wonder, dancing, and there's acting, there's comedic acting. As I'm speaking to you right now, I'm quite sure you're in your voice acting booth as I look at your equipment and setup. Very nice, by the way. Let me just say that.
Thank you.
Is there anything which comes easier or was more difficult for you to pick up along the way? Some types of comedic timing you can't teach, you just have to have.
That is true. There doesn't seem to be any add this plus this mix. You're right. I think comedic timing, from the other actors that I've experienced it from, who I would consider to be geniuses, I know that they have in their experience honed and developed, and also of course learned from other people, as you inevitably do, like a tennis match. You know, if you play someone better than you, you're probably going to pick up a few pointers. But you're right. A lot of those things are just intrinsic, intuitive, and some of them can't be taught. You're right. So I think for me, I'm not sure where the comedic timing came from. I was always a writer, though. And I think my appreciation for timing and for rhythm came from a lot of the writing that I appreciated growing up. And it wasn't anything unusual. It was like, you know, Beverly Cleary and things like that, and E.B. White. But like the way those writers crafted their stories was very precise. And I think I just always had an ear for that. And whether that came through the dance and my piano classes and things like that, I'm sure those affected that as well. But the dance has been maybe the biggest influence on my life as a whole, even though I stopped dancing formally years and years ago, but it persists as an influence.
It's interesting. You talk about your ear, but also I would say your eye. I mean, there's the graphic designer portion of your life.
Yeah.
There's so many things that you've done. You've lived a number of lifetimes, I would say, respectfully. At what point did you know that this business of entertainment was what was for you?
You're right. And that's another way that I have been fortunate, I think, because I have had all these different paths, and I had no concept at the time that they would all sort of consolidate into what I do now. But the dance, the design, the writing, all those things have combined in ways that really inform my acting process. And it was really born out of boredom. I was working as a graphic designer, and it was creative, but static. You know, I just sat and tapped away at a computer all day. And I missed collaborating with people. I missed working with a lot of different people in a lot of different areas to all create one finished product. I thought that was so fun. And I remembered as a dancer having that experience. And I did a couple plays in college, mostly as a dancer. But, you know, just that sense of teamwork and the excitement of sharing this thing with an audience. And so it was just boredom, really. I was like, oh, what do I miss? And then I just kind of got back into theater in my community, and it was super community, like community theater. And it was so much fun. And I started working professionally after that. And that blew my mind. You can get paid to do this. And like, it wasn't very much, but still, I had just never connected those dots. I never thought that you could actually make a living, maybe make a living, and also do something that you loved.
We'll be home before midnight. You do your push-ups.
Side crunches. I would say 3 sets of 12.
Hamstring curls.
And so we want to do pull-ups. We want to do underhand.
Toe presses. Drink your shake. And remember, Mom and Dad love you.
Okay.
Bye, sweetie.
Q. KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. This is the Mo Kelly Show. And if you're just tuning in, joining me via Zoom as we continue our conversation, Joy Osmansky, as we're talking about Fox's Duncanville, which has already been renewed for a third season. And there's also DC's Stargirl, which is preparing for its season two premiere coming up later this summer. And Joy, let me just start with DC's Stargirl, because I'm a nerd.
Sure.
And I'm into all that kind of stuff. And I have a great appreciation for the choreography of martial arts scenes.
Oh, man. Me too.
Okay, so you know kind of where I'm going with this. How much time do you have from when, let's say from storyboard to completion, where they present the scene, okay, and Tigress is going to fight, and they're going to fight for 3 minutes, and you're going to do flips, and you're going to flip your hair around it. How much time do you have from when it's first presented to you to actual completion?
Given the amount of time that the stunt team works and then creates what's called a previs, which is, you know, to give us all a sense of what to expect from the stunts, the time that I have is minuscule. But that is okay, because they have done every single step that needs to make me ready to do what I need to do. And let me be very, very clear. What I actually do is very, very little, because my stunt doubles are incredible artists, and they are the ones who hurl themselves off walls and fly through the air. And I foolishly in the beginning was like, that looks like fun. I want to be in a harness. I want to do that. And then Lauren, my stunt double for season one, she came into the makeup trailer one day and she had been in a harness and she was just covered in bruises. And I was like, actually, no, I'm good. I'm good. Yeah. I was like, who did I think I was? Like, yeah, that's fun. Clearly no idea. So what I do, though, has been really fun. And again, so informed by the dance training. And once Walt knew that, the stunt coordinator, he was like, oh, great, you're going to be fine. And it really did help me pick up the choreography quickly. Because, you know, if you have a lot of dance training, it's in your body to speak that language. And so it was so helpful for me. And they were able to give me a lot of really fun stuff to do. So I ended up doing way more than I would have expected to do, but still nothing compared to what the actual stunt people are doing. Man, they're amazing.
Have you had any formal martial arts training to help complement what you're doing on screen?
No. And in fact, I would say I have studiously avoided that.
Really? It just seems like with dancing and flexibility, it would just lend itself in many ways.
You're so right. And I have nothing but respect for all the various forms of martial arts. And I have, of course, many friends who are very skilled, and I have so much respect. But for me personally, as an actor, I just never felt called to do it. And I never felt like it would inform my work in a way that I related to. I didn't until this role, and still have trouble accepting the thought of being an action person. Like, that doesn't really compute for me still. When I see myself do it, I'm like, there I am.
You got me fooled. I mean, you got me believing it. And I've taken martial arts for years. So it's like, well, okay.
Oh, wow.
And I have a discriminating eye. So I'm going to be a little bit more critical. And I understand that there's stunt doubles and all that. But I'm going to be far more critical than the average person who has never had any training. I'm looking for, can the actor or actress at least make me believe that they put in the time to learn some of the authentic movements? And you do that beautifully, and I'm not going to lie.
Oh, well, thank you. And again, the stunt people are also our teachers, and they do such a beautiful job of making it accessible. But again, the dance, like, and Walt was really picky with me. Like, he would say, your foot's a little bit too high. You need to bring it down like 3 inches.
Right.
Like, that's not exactly the kind of kick we're doing. I think you know what you're doing, but what I actually want is this. And I was able to make those adjustments, hopefully. You know, I always say, if Walt Garcia gives you a thumbs up after a take, it means you've really killed it. If he doesn't, it doesn't mean you didn't do well, but I would be lying if I told you that I would be like devastated if I didn't get a thumbs up from Walt. I was like, oh, damn it. I could have done that better.
Joy, I'm really loving this conversation. Can I get you to stay around for one more segment? Because we got to talk about Duncanville, which is going to be renewed. It's already been renewed for its third season, but season two premiere is coming up on the 23rd. So we got to talk about that. KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. This is the Mo Kelly Show. And I want to continue my conversation with actress Joya Osmansky, voice actress. Her comedic timing is wonderful. She's an action star. She doesn't want to claim it, but I'm going to give it to her. You've seen her as Tigress on CW's Stargirl. You've heard her on Fox's Duncanville. And great news, it's already been renewed for a third season, but the season two premiere is coming up on Sunday, May 23rd. You play Jing, a five-year-old precocious, very precocious little girl who's, in a very innocent way, is in love with her older brother, who she admires greatly, Duncan, played by Amy Poehler, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
What is that experience like as a voice actress, and does Jing get to grow in a certain way from season to season, do you think?
Yeah, it's been incredible. I mean, when you look at it on paper and you see who's involved, you want to think, oh, this will be amazing. And then when it actually is, you just keep kind of like pinching yourself to make sure that it's happening. Amy is unbelievable. We, in table reads, we watch her go back and forth between playing the mom and Duncan seamlessly. And these are clearly characters that are deeply in her because she accesses them so easily. And sometimes I forget. I honestly forget that it's her. She does Duncan so well. And yeah, Jing, my character, adores him in the way that, you know, I always wanted an older brother when I was growing up. I am an older sister, but I always thought having an older brother would be like having a knight in the family. And I think that's how Jing kind of looks at Duncan, is this just shine. But she's also, I think, and this becomes even more aware in season two, she's also acutely aware of his flaws and starts to call him out a little more. But I think while maintaining the adoration in the way that only a five-year-old can do, you know, because they're brutally honest, like my five-year-old, brutally honest, but also still thinks the sun rises and sets via his mother. So, but he takes me down a peg, like daily.
One ear of corn, one slice of bread. Oh, the diet starts tomorrow. Am I right?
Oh, she's onto something, Jack. Unleash her!
Couldn't we have just gone to Whole Foods?
Yeah, but look at how much fun she's having.
Got it. I cleaned the dust off the ceiling fan.
How did you get up there?
Does it really matter? I don't know what you did, Mommy, but it sounds irredeemable. Oh, guess what? I learned a new word today.
Stop saying marry me.
Stop saying what?
Marry me.
I will.
You literally took my next question, because I was wondering how motherhood for you either informs or influences specifically that role, or whether there's something in, if it's, this is not too personal, if there's something in Jing being adopted, which speaks to you as well.
Yeah, absolutely. When I auditioned for the role, I don't think casting knew that I was adopted as well, and did not know that I also have a child who was adopted. So for me, that theme runs deep. And the fact that I get to play her is something completely, well, I've played one other adopted animated character. So I don't know, I'm carving out this little niche for myself.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Nope, nothing wrong with that. But no, it's incredible to actually represent that specific story on a network show. You know, that doesn't happen like ever. So to get to do that is a really lovely experience. And yes, I steal from my children constantly, shamelessly. I mean, they're constantly providing me with two loud voices, very opinionated. And that is exactly who Jing is. So it's not a stretch. And it's also not a stretch because a lot of her is still in me.
I usually don't go here with guests, but I think I can. And we're living in a time in which there's a lot of focus on the entertainment industry in a variety of ways as far as representation, how it may go about representing specifically African Americans, Asian Americans, and what have you. Without prefacing it more than that, what would you say about the state of the entertainment industry, television, right about now in that regard?
That it can do better. That it can do much, much better. I think we're so starved for it that when any little incremental step is taken, we like celebrate it. And fine, that's great. I think it's positive and valid to reinforce that. But I think it should make us even more hungry to see bigger change, to see, because there's no reason not to. There's absolutely no reason not to. And time again, Audience, the bottom line shows that when you people your casts with a lot of diversity, audiences respond to that because that is life. That is what we are seeing all around us. And unless it's, you know, like a show about aliens, but even then, like, I want to be able to see there's an Asian person under all that prosthetics. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see that. Like, something that always bothered me in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, I'm like, yo, where are the people of color in this? It is a fantasy world. It should be like wide open to that. So yeah, we still have a long way to go. And I think it's important that we stay very frank about that. Like I said, like, celebrate the wins, but also push for much more.
I'm going to give you an insincere question because I think I know the answer, but I'm going to ask it because I want to hear your specific response. Why should it matter if there are more or fewer Asian folks or of Asian descent on the screen in a movie about aliens or something else? Why? Because I know someone who's listening doesn't really give a damn, doesn't see why that should be important. What would be your answer for that?
Well, I think, you know, in how I grew up, the era that I grew up of TV, there was barely any representation. And when it was often exoticized. It was fetishized. It certainly wasn't something that I thought, oh, that could be me. And that was across genres. And nowadays, like, it is so important. When my kids, my daughter's biracial, my son is Black, when they watch television, I have to make sure that who they see is someone that reflects back at them. That is my responsibility as a parent. And luckily, there's more and more of it. But even in a fantasy world, I still want to see that all different people in our reality have a reflection. Even more so, in a way, because there's the rules in fantasy worlds are wide open. You know, and so there's no reason. It is, I think, sheer laziness, and at best, and at worst, just blatant racism, not to include all different people. So yeah, for my children as viewers, I want them to look at the content that they're seeing and say, I could do that, I could be that, I could create that.
Joy, how can people find you on social media?
I'm at Joy Osmansky on Twitter and Instagram.
You can find Joy Osmansky on Duncanville. She plays Jing, which is going to be, it's already been renewed for its third season. And the season 2 premiere is Sunday, May 23rd. And you can also see her as part of Stargirl. She plays Tigress, kicking ass and taking names.
And which I should say, we just got picked up for a third season.
Hey, that's what I'm talking about. So everything is great going on in Joy's world. Joy, thank you so much for coming on. And please don't let this be the last time that you come on the Mo Kelly Show.
Absolutely. I would love to visit you again. Thank you for having me.
KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. This is the Mo Kelly Show. And I guess we're actually going to have a summer movie season, or let me clarify, some movie studios think that there is going to be a summer movie season. I guess they saw the CDC guidelines that we were discussing earlier in the program, and they're getting ready to go buck wild and say, hey, we're going to put movies back in movie theaters. Come to our movie theaters and see these movies, you know, like we used to. I got some questions, Twala.
I have some big questions.
All right. Your questions first.
My questions are, with this newly announced like slate of summer movies, where many of them will also be released direct to streaming services at the same time, which of these summer releases will be enough for anyone to venture out and risk possibly getting infected? There is a variant out there. Who knows? All I'm saying is, would you risk COVID to go and see any of these movies? That's the question.
Let's say that there are a lot of people, whatever a lot means, a lot of people who want to see these movies in theaters. My question would be, are there enough movies to support the industry? Because the summer movie season, that's supposed to be where they get most of their money. And if there aren't that many movies out there, and we'll go into a list of some of them, I'm not sure from looking at this list that there are enough movies to keep movie theaters in business
throughout those summer months, especially when, to your point, a good number of them will be simultaneously released on streaming platforms, and the others will be released, like in the course of some Disney movies, 45 days after their release in theaters. I can always wait 45 days. I'm busy most of the time. I can wait a month and a half, gladly.
Yeah, and I think that is another thing that has, you know, kind of put a real question mark on the summer movie release industry, much less the movie industry period, is that 90-day window is no longer a thing. You know, most every studio has now dropped it down to a 45 to some even a 30-day window before they release it to their streaming service. And everyone's got a streaming service now.
Everybody.
Universal Pictures, Paramount Pictures, you know, Warner Brothers, everyone's got a streaming service. So you're not going to also sacrifice your streaming service for, you know, a movie theater that's not invested in your company? Nah.
All right, let's run down the list. For the month of May, The Killing of Two Lovers, that's out now. No one's going to be going to see that. No. Spiral from the book of Saw, that's out. That's already bombed, okay? Those Who Wish Me Dead, I watched that today. That was horrible. It was simultaneously released on HBO Max because it was horrible.
Wow.
But that's another conversation for another day. The Woman in the Window, have no idea what it is. I'm not going to the movies to see it. It's going to be on Netflix as well. Army of the Dead, you might have heard about this one. It's in theaters and on Netflix May 21st. Well, I have Netflix. You know what that means. I'm not going to the theater. Cruella, I have no desire to see it. But it's going to be on Disney Plus as well when it's released on May 28th. Now, here's a major movie, A Quiet Place Part 2. It's in theaters May 28th. That's the only movie this month that's being released of any note. Is that going to be enough to keep all these movie theaters that I was hinting at and referencing in business financially?
Wow.
A Quiet Place 2, one movie on one weekend, and it's not even a major blockbuster? No. Let's go to June. The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It, in theaters and on HBO. You know what that means?
No.
Samaritan. I don't know what that is. It's in theaters June 4th.
Oh, no. That's the Sylvester Stallone superhero film.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. That actually is one that I actually might risk COVID for.
Wait, but that's one.
Know. It looks good.
That's one movie out of the 12 we listed so far. Spirit Untamed, in theaters only, June 4th. And there's Vivo on Netflix, June 4th.
Nope.
That's all of June, or most of June. There's Hitman's Wife Bodyguard, in theaters June 16th. No. There's Luca on Disney Plus, June 18th. So that should tell you. There's Fatherhood on Netflix, June 18th.
Oh, that's the Kevin Hart one.
Right.
I almost cried watching the trailer, but it's on Netflix, so it doesn't matter.
On Netflix. There's Peter Rabbit 2, The Runaway.
No. No.
The Sparks Brothers.
And what? No.
Now, here's the one. F9, in theaters June 25th. This arguably is the biggest movie of the summer.
Arguably, yes. So far, yes. F9, only in theaters. The Fast and the Furious series, that's something you have to see on the big screen. Right. You have to see that on the big screen.
But my point is, one movie alone is not going to sustain the theater for the month.
Oh, yeah. That's only one in June.
Yeah, right. Okay, wow. Let's go to July. There's Summer of Soul in theaters and on Hulu. There you go, Hulu. The Forever Purge. In theaters July 2nd. Now, the 4th of July weekend or in and around that time used to be huge. Huge.
Yeah.
It's not going to be because you have the Forever Purge coming out on July 2nd. Here's what's interesting. Black Widow, it comes out in theaters on June 9th. But, say it with me, Twala, it's coming out simultaneously on Disney Plus. So it cancels itself out. There's Escape Room 2 in theaters July 16th. No, I could wait for that.
I don't even know what that is.
There's Roadrunner, a film about Anthony Bourdain. Liked him a lot when he was alive. Don't need to go to a theater to see a movie about him in July 16th. Space Jam, A New Legacy. It's in theaters.
No.
And where else, Twala? HBO Max.
HBO Max.
Don't need to go.
No.
Old. That's the new M. Night Shyamalan movie. I'm interested in that. I really am. It's in theaters only July 23rd. Yeah. But you know what? I'm not that interested. I'm not.
No.
I can wait. And there's Snake Eyes in theaters July 23rd.
That's going to be big. G.I. Joe, Snake Eyes?
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Henry Golding. But still, not enough movies to justify the theater experience, even if they all do well. all of
so far
well.
You've only listed one July major release, and that's Snake Eyes. They're putting a whole lot on that for the future of the G.I. Joe franchise, but one film for July? This is death.
I think everyone gets the point. I can go on through the rest of August and everything, and the summer movie season is over when you hit August. The major releases, for the most part, are being simultaneously streamed and released in theaters. And the few that are only being released in theaters, I would say, just as a function of math and practical matter, are not enough to support the industry. And if the industry is willing to wait in terms of a whole calendar year to hopefully get back to normal, whatever that is, it's not going to happen. The major theater chains have been already dropping like flies. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. That's another thing. Where are you seeing these movies at? Because ArcLight and Pacific is gone. Oh yeah, yeah. AMC and there are some Regencies. I think I'm trying to figure out where you're going to actually see these. You know,
I'll tell you, mostly at home. They're just going to wait, like me. This is the Mo Kelly Show. We'll catch you next week. KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
You can listen to KFI everywhere, like you haven't noticed.
KFI.
And KOST HD2.
Los Angeles.
Orange County.
Live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.